They're 506 on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. You can join us at 888-630-9625. 888-630-WMAL. Of course, we're going through so many of the big questions affecting our country today, the truly big questions affecting our country. And I figure if we can root out some of the problems, we can fix a whole bunch of things, up to and including this horrific massacre. You hope, at least, you can mitigate some of it. This horrific massacre that took place in Texas yesterday in Uvalde, Texas. A gunman carrying a rifle, killing at least 19 children and two teachers, mostly inside of one fourth grade classroom. He barricaded himself inside, fought back, and law enforcement finally gunned him down. Now the nation reacts, and among the reactions we've seen, the American left wasted no time. Senator Chris Murphy, literally as cops were giving press conferences saying that families weren't yet notified, came out and called for, once again, disarming innocent American citizens. The president of the United States did the same thing last night as he returned from his trip to Asia and went to a podium inside of the Roosevelt Room of the White House and instantly attacked the, quote, gun lobby for the events of yesterday. Horrific stuff. Just awful, awful political opportunism. And all of these things that the left is pushing today, is there anything worth considering? What are they getting wrong here? For that, we turn to a guy who knows all about it. Stephen Gutowski is a firearms reporter, a gun safety instructor, and the founder of the great website, TheReload.com. Stephen, great to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Last night, Biden came out and was singing the praises of the previously in place so-called assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004, suggesting that it had some dramatic impact on helping the country. But help my recollection on this. There's been all sorts of looks at that, and as far as I can tell, that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think the best place to go for, you know, a comprehensive review of the studies done on various different gun policies and what effects they've had is the RAND Corporation's review in 2020. And, you know, they found that assault weapons bans have are inconclusive as far as what effect they have, if any, on mass shootings. And certainly you had mass shootings that occurred during the assault weapons ban, including, of course, Columbine.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, the actual data on mass shootings, let's talk about two elements of it. One, how does the government categorize what a mass shooting is, define a mass shooting? And secondly, what is the most common weapon used in a mass shooting?
Yeah, so the government doesn't really have an official definition of mass shooting. There's a definition of mass murder, which is four or more killed in a single incident. But, you know, there's been a lot of debate, obviously, over what exactly a mass shooting is, because traditionally it had been understood as basically mass murder with a firearm. So four or more people killed in a single incident. And more recently, you've seen the media and gun control advocates adopt a broader definition, which is four or more shot in a single incident, potentially even with more than one shooter involved. And so obviously that's opens up a much wider pool of incidents that are now identified as mass shootings, and that's where you get the idea that there's more than one a day. When, you know, in reality, there certainly are not more than one a day of incidents like what we saw in Texas yesterday,
right,
and much, much more horrible.
So, in other words, when we see data that is trying to whip up fear about the prevalence of mass shootings, the media is often leaving in the minds of the average American news consumer that these consist of school shootings that are happening every day all over the place. And what they're really doing is lumping in together data about things like gang shootings in the inner city.
Right. Yeah, that's accurate. I mean, they're conflating very different kinds of shootings into this term of mass shooting. But to answer your original question, there wasn't an NIJ study that looked at the four or more killed definition of mass shootings and found that over 70% of the shooters used handguns in those incidents over the last 50 years. And then it's about 23% used. AR-15s are similar type firearms.
Okay. Last night, Biden said the following. Let me play this for you, and I want to get your reaction. He's talking about so-called assault rifles. Take a listen.
What in God's name do you need an assault rifle for except to kill someone? Deer aren't running through the forest with Kevlar vests on, for God's sake. It's just sick. And the gun manufacturers have spent two decades aggressively marketing assault weapons, which make them the most and largest profit. For God's sake, we have to have the courage to stand up to the industry.
Now, there's some political, you know, gamesmanship going on here with Joe Biden. First of all, he's making it seem like the only reason anybody could ever possibly own a gun is to hunt. Secondly, the AR-15 is used in some forms of hunting, and he's pretending that that's not the case. Clear that up for me.
Yeah, I mean, certainly this is something that the president has been arguing for almost his entire career. The line about deer and Kevlar vests is a common one that he likes to use whenever he talks about gun policy. But certainly, AR-15s, it's the most popular rifle in the country. Clearly, the only purpose is not for murdering people. There are 18 million AR-15s and similar style rifles already in circulation, according to the National Shooting Sports Foundation. So it's a lot of guns that people already own. You own them for all sorts of different reasons. Of course, if you're a normal law-abiding person, there's sport shooting, hunting is one. And then, of course, most commonly is home defense or self-defense.
Right. And with the AR-15 is a useful rifle to learn how to shoot on, correct? I mean, just because my understanding is with .223 ammunition, the recoil is a little bit lighter, especially women can handle it pretty well. It's relatively accurate. I mean, what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right as far as one of the main advantages of the AR-15 to some, you know, other kinds of rifles is that it is lighter. It does have less felt recoil when you're shooting, which enables the shooter to be more accurate. And so it is a favorite among women in particular. But you know, it's also obviously been the similar platform to what the military has used for years. So veterans, of course, like the gun, and similar phenomenon you've seen with 1911 pistols over the years. That was a common sidearm in the Army for decades and remains extremely popular with the general public today.
You know, one of the things that Democrats will suggest sometimes is they want to remove some feature that makes the rifle more accurate. They figure if the rifle is less accurate, that would benefit the American public. So that way some homicidal maniac can't take such easy shots. I think that's the theory that goes into it. But wouldn't making a rifle less accurate make it more dangerous?
Certainly it could, obviously. A lot of things they point to as being advantageous for, someone in a mass shooting would obviously just make the gun advantageous generally as a usable firearm. I think one of the problems is when you're dealing with these mass shooting situations, you're dealing with somebody who is going through and killing people who are defenseless in that moment.
Yeah.
And there isn't really much... There hasn't really been a lot of mass shootings that relied on someone being extremely accurate or extremely proficient with their guns. They just rely on attacking innocent people who are defenseless.
Yeah, it's just awful. Are there any consistencies among these mass shooters that you've seen in terms of how they acquired their weapons and whether or not any new laws would have prevented that? Because it seems to me that so many, like in the case of this shooter in Uvalde, he legally acquired his guns. He went through a background check. He bought it from a federally licensed dealer. And yet what we hear from Democrats right now is what would have prevented it is if we had so-called universal background checks, if we forced background checks on private sales. What do you see in the trends among these killers?
Yeah, I mean, certainly most mass shooters that I can recall did actually obtain their firearms by going to a licensed dealer and passing a background check. Certainly these last two in Buffalo and Texas follow that trend. And so, yeah, something like universal background checks would not have made a difference in this case. I believe there was the Dallas police shooting a few years back that I believe he had bought his gun through a private sale. So that's maybe one example. But usually, these guys don't have a disqualifying criminal or mental health history in terms of nobody is actually either, held them responsible for domestic violence they've been involved with or put them through the red flag law if it was available like it was in New York and they had serious warning signs like was the case in Buffalo. But, that tends to be more of the easier answer is you can, hindsight is kind of 20/20. You can see a lot of red flags with
yes.
a number of these shooters and say, well, this should have been done differently.
As a culture, Stephen, we've kind of stigmatized saying that someone has a mental health problem or even reporting it. Like we've made it seem like every person to each their own, they can do whatever. There is no such thing as like a mental illness. It's affirmation always, whatever somebody's doing, that's kind of their thing. I don't want to get involved. Like we've kind of been conditioned to disconnect from each other on that.
Perhaps. I mean, certainly it's more difficult to involuntarily commit somebody than it used to be, but, certainly there are good reasons for that, of course, with abuses that existed in the mental health system, years ago that led to those reforms. And so, there's trade-offs for all of these things, of course, when you're talking about solutions. And perhaps a red flag law would have been helpful in Texas. Maybe it wouldn't have. I mean, they had one in New York and it wasn't used. Better training on how to involuntarily commit someone or how to recognize the signs that somebody is potentially going to become violent in this way. I don't want to make it sound like there's nothing that can be done. I don't think that there is a silver bullet that's going to fix the whole situation overnight from any of the proposals on any side that I've heard commonly over the years.
Okay, so all these Democrats who are running out and advocating for gun control immediately in the wake of this, again, we are still learning details from what took place yesterday in Texas. You haven't seen anything that would say, yeah, that would meaningfully bring an end to mass shootings in the United States.
No, certainly nothing that's going to solve every issue. Same for what I've seen from Republicans suggesting hardening schools or having more armed guards. Both Buffalo and Texas had someone armed there who tried to stop the shooting and wasn't able to before it occurred. It's just one of those situations where there are things that may help, better enforcement when somebody actually convicting someone of a domestic violence misdemeanor, like in the Parkland situation, or sharing the records they already had, like what the problem was in Sutherland Springs, where the system broke down in that way.
Yes.
I don't want to make it sound as though there's nothing that can be done to improve things or improve the odds of stopping these. It's just that there isn't going to be one easy switch that you flip.
No, not at all. Although you mentioned Sutherland Springs, it reminds me that one of the features of that event was that there was a former NRA instructor who was there armed with an AR-15 who was able to chase the assailant away from the scene of that attack. And, a long time ago, I went through a list of the many acts of self-defense that have taken place with guns. They don't receive national press attention because, by and large, they don't involve that many people being shot. But self-defense has played a critical role in preserving people's lives in the face of this kind of evil.
That's absolutely correct. Being armed is not a guarantee that you will survive an attack like this or that you'll be able to stop it before it gets out of hand. Certainly it has happened in the past. There are a number of examples that you could point to of different active shooters who were neutralized before they were able to take as many lives as as some of these other guys because someone was armed there. And, you know, obviously, I think the idea of being armed is not it's important to note that it doesn't guarantee your safety. Having a gun does not guarantee your safety. The idea that most people advocate for is that it gives you a chance, at least, and that, you know, in Buffalo and in Texas, at least there was some better chance that they could have stopped him. And perhaps in Texas, there's reports of a border agent who went in while he was still trying to kill people and stopped him from killing even more.
Yeah. Yeah, who
There's
knows?
Something to that.
Yeah, no, right. That so many more lives could have been lost if were it not for the law enforcement officials getting in there and eliminating the threat. It's just awful news, but it's tough to go through it and then to come out of it and then try and have a sober conversation about what happened so we can try and prevent it again. But you're helping us do that. Thank you, Stephen Gutowski, with TheReload.com. Great to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
Remember here, as you're hearing so many of these Democrat responses, they're looking to exploit the tragedy in order to help their chances at more power in the future, not to give us solutions of any kind. Reminder here, Donnie Deutsch on MSNBC about a week ago, in the wake of the shooting in Buffalo, had this to say on MSNBC.
Lie. You take this heinous platform and you make the Republicans own it. I want to say it again. Make the Republicans own it. Every Republican politician, every Republican candidate, ask them about it. Make them because they can't run from it because it's part of who they are at this point, as disgusting as that is. But make it the Republican replacement theory. Mainstream it because this is the way you have to scare. We don't have the economy on our side as Democrats. So you have to scare the bejesus out of people. The way to scare it is say, you know, this replacement theory, this is not just coming from some dark corner of the web. This is the Republican platform.
We don't have the economy on our side as Democrats, says Donnie Deutsch on MSNBC. We have to scare the bejesus out of people. So you wonder why Beto O'Rourke shows up like he's a Westboro Baptist Church member today, screaming at Texas officials who are just trying to share information with the public. Tells you a lot. It's 529. Hey there, 535 on Newstalk 105.9 WMAL, where we're making sense of the news. You can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. I want to get to the developments in the Michael Sussman trial coming up here shortly. We'll talk about that's Hillary Clinton's lawyer hauled in front of a jury charged with lying to the FBI. But the FBI not getting off scot-free in this trial either. More information about their misdeeds coming up, just coming out, too, finally being made public. But before we get there, we do have some good calls standing by. We always have great calls standing by. Again, at 888-630-9625. Let's get Kevin in Manassas in here on line 8. Kevin, thank you for patiently waiting. What's on your mind, sir?
Well worth it, sir. I had something I want to say, but just listening to all of that. You know, the Democrats are incapable of analyzing facts and data, using their minds to have a logical debate with people. They always resort to the lowest common denominator of demonizing people on the other side. If they were capable of that, maybe we could solve problems in this country. But what I really called to say was, I wonder if anyone's commissioned a study, and if they have, I don't know about it, that would draw a line between the time when God and prayer were taken out of our schools in these mass shootings, because it seems we've raised generations of people, and I'm 50 years old. I grew up in the 80s. I know all about that culture of do it if it feels good. Don't worry about tomorrow. You don't have to pay for anything. And almost now they're narcissistic and nihilist type people, mm-hmm. who all they want to do is see themselves on social media and get all kinds of attention. And we really have raised some mentally ill people in this country. And let us not forget that it's Democrat policies that have told people. You don't need a father in the home. You don't need a God in your life. We'll provide. The state will provide.
Yes. And they've
I think that's a lot of the cause of our problem.
And they've made things so economically difficult that now, even if you have two parents in the home, they're not actually at home. They're both at work because people can't even afford the one breadwinner household. Yeah, no, things are very challenging, Kevin. And I don't think you need a study to prove the points you just made. I think you and I both know that reflexively. I think a lot of people are listening to this and saying, yeah, he's right. You can feel it. You know what's going on. The godlessness is kind of all over the place, and it is hurting us.
Certainly is. And, I'm not a Bible thumper. I was raised in the church. And, to be quite honest with you, a lot of this stuff that I see going on in society now is drawing me back closer to God.
Yes.
And I know that my mother would be so happy to hear that because I'm from the old country and western song, the only hell my mother ever raised. And my mother would love nothing more than to see me come back to God.
Yeah.
And this society in this day and age is really proving to me that what my parents taught me when I was a kid and what I learned in Sunday school and at church,
yes,
it's totally true.
Well, this is why.
God bless you, Vince.
This is why, Kevin, before you bail on me here, this is why it's so important that the churches not go sideways, right? How many times have you seen stories where the churches go full-blown leftist? And you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you adopting? Why are you adopting the secular values that people are looking to get away from?
And I think a lot of that comes from, I remember going to church. It wasn't that people weren't welcome. The preacher preached the word of God. And if you had a problem when you got your toes stepped on, that was just the way it was. Nowadays, I think a lot of it has to do with money, unfortunately. They want to appeal to everyone.
Well,
they don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But there are going to be a lot of people in hell because people are not preaching what the word of God says because they're too afraid of hurting people's feelings and making people angry.
Yeah, I mean, what is the point of the church if you're not going to be the refuge from all the nonsense? I mean, you're going to engage in it, you're going to advance it. Come on, you've literally undermined the reason for your existence. Kevin, thank you. Good call. I really appreciate that. And again, thanks for waiting. Catherine is in De La Plaine, calling in on line one. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Vince. I think there's a moral breakdown in society because there's no morals. They aren't taught any morals at home, and the government doesn't have any morals either.
Well, let me add one correction to that. They are teaching a moral code, but it's a very demented one. It's essentially that, like, the greatest sin you can commit is to offend. And offending includes rational judgment. Like, you can judge something. You're like, I'm sorry, you are not a girl. You cannot go into that restroom. Well, now you're the bigot for saying that. So what we've done is we've supplanted a foundational moral code with a new one that is completely incoherent and deeply destructive.
Right, but the government doesn't have any morals either, and they aren't enforcing their own laws. They're allowing shoplifting up to like $1,200 in certain places.
Yep.
They've eliminated bail, and they're not holding people. They're just let them back out to commit more crimes. They're not enforcing our border. So I think people look at all this and they go, oh, I can do what I want. They've taken the police out of many schools. They've cut back on the number of police. And I know that punishment and reward work.
Yeah.
People learn from those.
No question. In fact, to your point, Catherine, about bail and its impact on society. You see the story earlier this week of the guy who killed a Goldman Sachs guy on the Q train in New York City. The shooter in this unprovoked New York City subway attack surrendered to police this week in the Fifth Precinct. And police officers get a hold of him. They say he's 25 years old. His name is Andrew Abdullah. He has 20 prior arrests, 20 prior arrests for assault, robbery, menacing, and grand larceny, in addition to three additional cases that are still pending. Police say he was arrested on April 22nd for allegedly being in possession of a stolen motorcycle, and that while the Brooklyn District Attorney asked for $15,000 bail, the judge set his nominal bail at $1. One single George Washington.
And this is the government doing this. And it has to do with the prosecutors, the George Soros prosecutors.
Yes.
And that they don't, it's like they want all this crime. And that's what they're getting in some areas. But you've got other places that are, you know, enforcing their laws, and then you don't have as much. But punishment works.
Yeah. No question.
People learn. That's one of the ways that is a very effective way for people to learn, and they're not doing that. Reward works, too. But if your reward is that, you know, you go in and you take what you want out of that store, and then there's no punishment, you're going to go steal again.
Yep. What are you going to get more of? Thank you, Catherine. Good points all around. I really appreciate that. Let's get Mike and Sunshine in here, line three. Mike, good afternoon to you.
Vince, thanks for taking my call. Vince, I've been handling firearms for 50 years, since I was 10 years old. And I'd like somebody to ask Joe Biden what an assault weapon is other than a long gun, rifle or shotgun, that is a semi-automatic that looks scary to a Dianne Feinstein staffer. Because that's what they did.
That's it. Back
during the original assault weapons ban, that Dianne Feinstein said, hey, get these catalogs and go through them and look for guns that look scary, mainly tactical looking weapons.
You know how you detect it? You grab one of Dianne Feinstein's interns and you stand them there and then you show them the weapon. And then depending on how much they're shaking, like a Richter scale, that's how you decide it's an assault weapon.
That's correct.
That's it. That's the whole thing. No, you're right. That's the way they define it. It's all emotional. People who don't even understand the guns themselves passing laws, banning features that they don't even know how they work.
They wouldn't know a semi-automatic from a bolt action, from a pump action, from a lever action, from a brake action. They wouldn't know what a semi-automatic is. And that's what really is disturbing in my mind.
Big time.
There's a lot of semi-automatic shotguns that are used in hunting. I have a couple. So they're everywhere and used by hunters every season, every hunting season.
Yeah, no question at all. Thanks. Very good call. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate the phone call. So there was this reminded me. Mike's call reminds me of, you know, Tucker Carlson once had an MSNBC show many years ago. He was once on MSNBC. This is before MSNBC went full-blown left-wing. They were kind of like feeling out their identity. Apparently, it didn't include Tucker. So they canned him. But while he was on, he had a congresswoman on, Carolyn McCarthy, who was trying to advance a ban on barrel shrouds. And she wasn't even familiar with her own legislation. Listen to the conversation. I just pulled this up. Conversation between Tucker Carlson and then Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney.
In February, you introduced the Assault Weapons Ban and Law Enforcement Protection Act of 2007. It would regulate semi-automatic assault weapons, including weapons that have pistol grips, a forward grip, and something called a barrel shroud. Weapons with a barrel shroud would be regulated. What's a barrel shroud, and why should we regulate it?
I think the more important thing is it also would have had banned the large capacity clips
right.
that Colin Ferguson had
but
used and also the killer. Okay.
But I read the legislation and it said that it would regulate barrel shrouds. What's a barrel shroud and why should we regulate that?
The guns that were chosen back in those days were basically the guns that most gangs and criminals were using to kill our police officers. I'm not saying it was the best bill, but that was the best bill they could get out at that particular time. I actually don't know what a barrel shroud is.
Oh, okay, because it's in your legislation.
I believe it's a shoulder thing that goes up.
No, it's not.
I believe it's the shoulder thing that goes up, she says. And he goes, no, it's not. This is in her legislation. The lawmaker has no idea what she's talking about. She has no idea what she's banning. This is what they do. Complete ignorance of the law. Again, what is a barrel shroud? You include it in your legislation. Why are we regulating it? Do you know what a barrel shroud is? Eventually, Mercy, she just taps out. She's like, no, I don't. I believe it's the shoulder thing that goes up. Oh, my gosh, these people. They have power. They have power. They're able to ban these things. Our friend Donna is calling in from Frederick now. Donna, line four. Good afternoon, Donna. Go ahead.
Hi, it's time to ban them. I think we, the people, are so sick of them. How they use these events for political gain, it is disgusting.
Yeah, big
and
time.
I'll tell you, it brings me back to the loss of a friend of my family's who was killed in Sandy Hook.
Oh.
And I keep thinking, have we learned anything in those 10 years? You know, we've got Soros funding the Center for American Progress and all these things involved in the schools. None of the money ever goes to protecting those schools. Instead, we send it over to foreign countries.
It's just
disgraceful. We don't even take care of our own citizens.
And yeah, and like, look, if Congress wants to protect something, Donna, if Congress decides, like, oh, there's a threat to some body of you know, leadership, they can pass legislation and funding and everything in a heartbeat. The second Nancy Pelosi wanted to bring National Guard around Washington, D.C. after January 6th, it was a fortified city. You were not getting to the nation's Capitol building. You're not. As a citizen, you were not making it. Why? Because they decided to harden the security around it. Now, of course, that was all theatrics. That was not commensurate with any meaningful threat. We saw recently bipartisan movement to rapidly pass security and additional support for Supreme Court justices, and that made a lot of sense because they were being threatened by these lunatics who are going after them for simply doing their jobs. But again, Congress was able to move lightning speed on that. But on this, their first move is we have to disarm the innocents. I'm sorry, what? How is that a solution to this? And to your point, they've done nothing to mitigate these threats. Instead, every single time they've tried to seize the advantage of the threats in order to pass the same exact legislation that they've been hawking for years, which will not have the effect that they claim.
Yeah, and it's always about their power. It's never about power to the people, and that's what we need returned.
Amen.
We need to stand up and take it back. And unfortunately, the left keeps... And I don't know what inspires these radical people to do this, but this is the second event in what a week. While meanwhile, we've got more important things going on that they should be solving instead of inspiring this radical mantra that they're promoting. It's just sickening to me.
It's gross.
And look at 2,000 mules, because those are the things that we have to focus on.
Well, that's exactly right. There's a million very important things to deal with. And one of them, of course, is this horrific slaughter of our children. I just can't even imagine. Thank you very much, Donna. I appreciate the call as always. I do want to get to, she mentioned John Durham. Let's get to his story in just a moment, because we're going to talk Michael Sussman, what we're finding out in that courtroom this week, and how it does get to how the FBI's misconduct is very much a part of this story. Well, the special counsel John Durham and his prosecutors resting their case today against Hillary Clinton lawyer Michael Sussman, saying, yes, he lied to the FBI, broke the law, lied to the FBI about the fact that he was working for Hillary as he was pushing this bogus information about Trump and Russia to the FBI. Today, they brought out that wild evidence for the jury that they've got the paperwork demonstrating that Sussman, although he told James Baker, I'm not here representing any client, he billed the Clinton campaign. He billed them. And Durham finally presenting that evidence to the jury today. Again, open and shut for any normal person. But for a D.C. jury, well, we'll see. We'll see. We got Hillary Clinton donors among the jury. So uphill battle here. For John Durham, despite all of the facts being on his side. Also this week, you know, you think about this case, you know, one of the things you're on guard for is like, okay, let's stop pretending like the FBI was merely lied to. They were misled by the Clinton people. No, the FBI's got its own problems, of course. And yesterday we discovered that the FBI is conducting an internal review. It has been conducting an internal review into misconduct within its ranks. Possible misconduct related to the Trump-Russia investigation, including potentially improper handling of a surveillance warrant that was used early in the investigation, according to an FBI agent testifying in court yesterday. CNN's right up here. FBI supervisory agent Curtis Hyde testified that an administrative inquiry is underway and that multiple FBI agents are being scrutinized, including himself. Hyde said the inquiry is being handled by the FBI's inspection division, which conducts those internal audits and can refer wrongdoing to the Office of Professional Responsibility, which can discipline or even recommend firings. The testimony came at the trial of Hillary Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman. Hyde said he was under investigation for, quote, not identifying exculpatory information as it pertained to one of the Crossfire Hurricane investigations, that is Trump-Russia collusion. So what's being alleged here is that FBI agents had exculpatory information, information that would prove there was no collusion, and were withholding it. That's vile. That's vile. The investigation continues into that. Hyde said he was specifically being investigated for withholding material from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which, remember, was used to spy on Carter Page. CNN says this is how they refer to the court. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which oversees wiretaps against Americans. It's supposed to be for foreigners, but they can, I guess, approach the court to expose who the American is. Again, it's for foreigners. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. The material in question was a recording from one of the subjects of the FISA applications, Hyde said. So again, now more evidence of FBI misconduct. They claim an internal investigation is continuing. It's the first they're telling the American public about it. We had to find out by closely watching the Sussman trial. It's real good. Real transparent, this administration. The great one, Mark Levin, up next right here on WMIL.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.